Welcome back to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. When we talk in Michigan about food insecurity or food deserts, it's usually talk about Detroit, Flint, cities battling poverty. But there is another region where access to healthy, fresh food is a constant challenge, the Upper Peninsula. Take Alger County. It's been classified by the USDA as a low-income, low-access community. That means people have to drive a minimum of 10 miles to get to a fully stocked grocery store. We wanted to look at food insecurity in the UP. John Sherman Jones is co-founder and chair of the Alger Community Food Pantry, and he's with us now. Welcome to the program, John.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And Matt Raven is a professor in the Department of Community Sustainability at Michigan State University. He and his team are developing an incubator farm in Alger County as a way to combat food insecurity. Matt, very good to have you with us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
John, let me start with you. Give us all an idea of what people in Alger County have to go through to gain access to fresh, nutritious food in a fully stocked grocery store.
I think one thing you have to understand, and it's harder for downstate urban areas to understand that, is we're a very spread out county. I mean, it looks like we were gerrymandered. We've got Grand Marais, which is 60 miles away from Munising. We extend all along Lake Superior. So it's not unusual for people to have to drive 60 miles to a well-stocked grocery store. You know, while they have little stores here and there available, they really don't have a lot of fresh produce, and especially seasonal, a lot of it. So it is tougher for us here, all resources, medical, to travel a long distance for us. So it is a challenge, and I think it's more of a challenge in the winter here where the fresh produce is much more expensive and harder to find.
And have things become more difficult because of the Great Recession? I mean, the state is slowly recovering from this, but, you know, how hard were people in your county hit, and are the effects still being felt?
You know, I keep hearing about the recovery, but it actually our numbers have increased 30% this year over last year. We're finding more and more people coming in here asking for help. And we're finding people who really, you know, never been to the programs that provide help. So we're getting newer people in that we've not seen before.
Matt, what are the, we'll start with the health consequences of having this kind of food insecurity in Upper Peninsula communities. What do you see?
As John was saying, I mean, it is a very rural area, and in addition to being very rural, it's very far north. You know, so you're north of the 45th parallel. In fact, parts of the UP are near the 47th parallel, and so that adds to the complexity of growing what we call nutrient-dense food or healthy, you know, high-quality foods in terms of fruit and vegetables. So you put that together with, you know, having a truck in food from across the bridge or from other parts of the country, it does lead to food insecurity. The UP has lagged behind the rest of the country in terms of economic recovery. I mean, there's still areas of the UP that have nearly 20% unemployment. And so that's one of the things that we want to try to combat is to leverage that natural resource base of the UP to create new jobs in the role of producing food. So that's a win-win. You put more people to work on the land, and at the same time, you increase the food security of the UP.
Tell us more about this incubator farm that you're developing. You're doing this in Chatham in Alger County?
Correct. Chatham is the location for the Upper Peninsula Research and Extension Center, which is our presence, or Michigan State's presence in the UP. That center is the oldest center in Michigan for what we do in terms of research and extension. We've had a presence at Chatham since 1899, so that's a long time. What we're doing is we're leveraging some of the old original buildings, and through the help of a USDA National Institute for Food and Agriculture grant, we're repurposing that part of the station into an incubator farm to provide resources and training for getting farmers and apprentice farmers to get the skills necessary to transition to their own farms and their own land. One of the big things that's lacking, there are some farmers out there, some beginning farmers, and we have a renewed interest in the younger generation getting back in the land to kind of have the expertise ready, to have the resources that they might not be able to afford right away, but that we can give to them by leveraging our land, leveraging the equipment we have there to get more experience, get more confidence, and then maybe even build a little bit of capital to move toward their own production units, primarily in the UP. That is our focus.
So when you say incubator farm, do you provide land? You provide training and you also provide land? So
correct.
Okay. What kinds of things are grown? What are they learning and what are they doing with that knowledge?
Well, I mean, we just got the grant this last year. This first summer, we hired a farm manager out of Iowa who has had a lot of experience in local food production, intensive food production, and also season extension. I'm using passive solar greenhouses, or also known as hoop houses. So we've been building the infrastructure this summer, and we've actually repurposed land, and we actually have crops going into Marquette Food Co-op, as well as Northern Michigan University, restaurants, and other locales. We are recruiting our first cohort this year. So our first cohort of apprentice farmers will start this following growing season. You know, we'll probably have a cohort to begin with of 3 apprentice farmers, and then it'll be a 2-year program where they'll have a quarter acre of their own land that we'll help with a business plan, a marketing plan. They'll also have space in our hoop house, as well as access to our farm manager and other expertise. For example, one of my colleagues, John Beerbaum, who's a professor of horticulture, who is well known, you know, in the Great Lakes region for, you know, season extension, organic farming, local food production. So, you know, we'll be growing multiple crops. One of the things we want to try to do is show farmers some of the new technologies out there to extend the season in a low-input way.
John Sherman-Jones, how much difference do you hope this makes in your county?
Oh, I think it's a great idea, and I really am all for trying to buy local, fresh, whole foods. For the people we're servicing, I'm not sure what the impact's going to be. You know, a lot of people think, well, just go out and grow your own food. But, you know, for a lot of people who are coming in to us for help, they don't have the investment to be able to, you know, do some of that. Maybe the hoop houses will open up some opportunity for them without taking that major investment in tools and supplies. There are a lot of people who get by up here in the UP with, you know, hunting and fishing and small gardens. But I'm not sure for the low-income population how significant an impact that'll be. I do think if it makes more fresh foods available, that will be a help.
I'm talking with John Sherman-Jones, who's co-founder and chair of the Alger Community Food Pantry, and Matt Raven, who's a professor in the Department of Community Sustainability at Michigan State University, as we look at food insecurity in the Upper Peninsula. And we do hear so much discussion about food insecurity issues in, say, Detroit. Why is it you think we hear so little about the same problems for people in the Upper Peninsula? What do you think, John?
Well, and we don't have the population density, so obviously the impact on the number of people is less. We're spread out a lot more. Also, I think there's a little more ability to be more independent if you live in a rural area. Like I said, people are used to hard winters, but I think it's the age-old problem that we're sparsely populated and we don't get the political attention of densely populated areas.
Is there also kind of a sense of, well, of course, it's the Upper Peninsula, meaning kind of almost expecting that having to drive far distances goes hand in hand with living there, but people who don't live in the Upper Peninsula don't realize what a challenge that can be?
I think that's true. Most Upers kind of accept that. You may have to go 60 miles to find a doctor, 60 miles to find a good grocery store, and plan for it. So we accept that, I guess, to some extent. You know, over the years, we've gotten a little more access to larger stores and that. But on the other hand, you know, I think Upers tend to accept that. Hey, you know, I can go walk on the beach and not see another person for a couple miles. And there's a sense of appreciation for some of that solitude, too. So, yeah, in some sense, we know it's going to be a hard winter. We know what winters are like, and we certainly know what snow is like. And we do accept some of that. But I think it doesn't negate the fact that people do struggle, and people on low income especially struggle to get food and to get fresh produce.
And Matt Raven, that's really the other component we're looking at, apart from just, yes, it's thinly populated because that's the Upper Peninsula. You have this, you know, great impact from the Great Recession and people coping with poverty in a way that is, I think, again, overlooked so often by folks downstate.
Yeah, definitely. And if you look at the UP, it represents 1/3 the landmass of Michigan. But if you look at their population, it's only 3%. You know, and it's interesting, in addition to the economy, is that even though it's a food desert, you know, the UP has severe problems with obesity. You know, so Michigan, and specifically the UP, you know, has the eighth highest rate of obesity in the United States. That's directly related to access to healthy, nutritious food. If we can start solving that problem where we have greater food security, of not only food security, but food justice, you know, I'm a firm believer that you should not have to be wealthy to afford good food. That's another nut that we have to crack. If you can, you know, build the economy, you know, based on natural resources and get good food, you know, locally produced, I think you can solve a lot of, you know, wicked problems at once.
And in a broad picture, it's hard to understand why it is we're sitting here talking about problems with food justice in Michigan when you consider the strength of Michigan's agricultural industry. I mean, aren't we just second only to California in the diversity of the crops that we grow in our state?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we are a very diverse ag production, and we're only second to California. That's true.
I guess it could be understood in a different way if we were sitting in Arizona having this conversation about problems raising, growing, and getting fresh food to people. But, you know, it just seems on a large scope, we shouldn't have to have this conversation.
A lot of the foods that we're talking about, you know, are being pushed out by, you know, corn and soybeans as well. As we continue to, you know, put more and more acreage into soybeans and corn specifically, especially corn because of ethanol, you see corn being grown further and further north. That changes the complexion of what is grown and who's growing it.
Yeah, good point. John Sherman Jones, actually, I want you both to answer this, but I'm going to start with you, John. What is the biggest change that you hope to see that would help your neighbors in the Upper Peninsula gain better access to healthy food?
Well, one of the concerns I have is the way we count success in food distribution. The USDA, for example, has us do monthly counts of every family we help with the food pantries, and we have to do that for the food banks like Feeding America. And yet the USDA portion of the foods that the food banks get, I mean, only averages 6 to 12%, but they're counting 100% of the people we help. And a lot of the food pantries have to go to grocery stores to, you know, supplement their standard stock. They don't just get it from food banks. More and more of the food bank stuff is purchased and not donated, and we struggle with donated items. So the USDA can look and count every single person we help, but they're actually, from a food bank position, providing 6 to 12% of the food. It seems really misleading. And not only that, there's duplication there. You know, we also, in our area, we get TFAP foods we give out, and we count every family for that. And then we count every family again for the USDA stuff coming from the food banks. And the numbers look great, but they're overlapping. They don't really give us a true sense of how much that food is helping. And, you know, if you've accessed the food bank and gotten USDA stuff one time out of the year, all year round, they're counting everybody you help. It's just a really inaccurate way of counting the impact of the USDA food. We try and concentrate on getting healthy food. We try and look at the big picture. You know, just getting a bunch of junk food out to people looks good in numbers, but it's not really helping them. Like Matt said, the obesity problems there, you know, getting unhealthy food out to people might make the numbers look good, but it's not going to do them a lot of good health-wise. So we're trying to get better quality whole foods, fresh foods as much as we can. We get some donations from one of the local grocery stores we've got set up. We're getting garden donations from elder correctional facilities, fresh produce coming in. We're trying to do the best we can to get quality foods to people. But I think sometimes the numbers don't give a good picture, and it can be very, very misleading, which you don't want to do. It's easy to give out free food. If I had free food and wanted to just give it out, I could give that really fast, and the numbers would look great. And if that's all they're looking at, I would be very successful. But, you know, the Eldridge Community Food Pantry's philosophy is trying to target the people most in need, when they most need it, and what they can use, keeping in mind nutritional priorities, and making sure that the last in line gets the same as the first in line, and to do it in a discreet and confidential manner to protect their dignity, and to make sure we have ample stock to give people something.
As I said, I see in your brochure, you say our resources are limited, and our intent is not to create dependency. So it is it's emergency assistance.
And the whole idea of TFAP is temporary emergency assistance, and yet we've kind of created a program where the one who gives out the most gets rewarded the most, and pretty soon their numbers look better, so they're getting more of the supply we used to get, and our numbers dwindle, and we're being punished because we're being more discretionary. And it's just not a good way to count success in food distribution.
Matt Raven, from where your point of view at Michigan State University and the work you're doing, what's your thought, the biggest change that you want to see that would help get quality food onto tables in the Upper Peninsula?
Well, one of the things that we're really working on is both, you know, research about quality foods and how it's produced, but also education about it. You know, the incubator farm at the North Farm, and that's what we're calling it. We're calling it the North Farm because that's where the original station was located. You know, it's the first step to building an educational and extension center around the concept of food and how it's produced and its linkages, you know, to healthy communities, to healthy people, and also healthy resources, because it's all connected. You know, we envision having this center that's basically from, you know, cradle to grave, you know, for people. And so we're starting with farmers, you know, beginning farmers, but, you know, we want to work with K through 12 schools. We want to work with two-year schools, four-year schools, and also what we call skill seekers. You know, those people that want to add enterprises to their existing farms or ranches, or those people that are in town that want to, you know, grow some of their own food. And I think that now, more than ever in my life, you know, we're seeing people talk about food again. I'm an old high school ag teacher. We've lost touch with the way our food is produced and the way it's distributed. In the last 5 to 6 years, not only in Michigan, but in the United States, we've seen a renaissance where, once again, people are talking about food, how it's produced, and what's in it. And to me, that's a very big step forward to fixing some of the issues we have with our food system. You know, we want to be able to grow healthy, nutritious food, you know, while improving our environmental resources in an economical way. You know, we're talking about the triple bottom line, where we take care of the economy, we take care of communities, and we take care of the environment. That's really kind of the key to sustainability, and we're looking at it through a food lens. What we're trying to do is position the Upper Peninsula Research and Extension Center to be that focal point for a lot of these efforts. And we want to work with groups that are already in the UP, such as food pantries, the Upper Peninsula Food Exchange, the Marquette Food Co-op, and all the other efforts that are up there. You know, I think sometimes in other parts of the country, you know, you have a lot of organizations that start stepping over each other. And one of our main goals is to make sure that we can work together and have a greater impact on what we're trying to do.
Fighting hunger and seeking food justice in the Upper Peninsula. We've been speaking with Matt Raven, professor in the Department of Community Sustainability at Michigan State University, and John Sherman Jones, who's co-founder and chair of the Alger Community Food Pantry. Thanks so much to both of you for talking with us today on Stateside.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.